Hi, everybody, and a warm welcome to today's episode. I'm excited. I'm thrilled having you all guys here. And it's going to be epic. It's going to be epic, nothing less than that. And for those of you that are joining the first time and listening to this podcast, The Joy of Logistics, the first time, let me briefly introduce myself. My name is Christoph. I'm now in logistics for roughly a decade. I did a bachelor in economics and logistics and have been working in the industry ever since. And the reason I created this podcast, The Joy of Logistics, is actually exactly what it sounds like. I want to show you guys that no matter the circumstances, logistics should be something easy and something fun. Although I know we had some challenges throughout the pandemic, but regardless, I'm grateful that we have it, and it actually keeps our world running the way it is. And the goal of The Joy of Logistics is I want to not only spread the word, but also increase the public understanding of logistics and supply chain management and all sorts of solutions and whatever is out there. Because I believe that this is desperately needed. Apparently, thank you, by the way, everybody, for showing up and for your interest in the whole topic and the whole conversations. This really shows me that there is a need for that. So I highly appreciate it. Thank you very much. And another reason why I started the Joy Logistics is also to provide outstanding people, mindsets, and companies and products a stage, a public stage, so they can venture out and get the voice spread and get the word spread. And I'm actually pretty grateful for all of my guests that have made it to the show yet, will be back again, and also for the ones that will come in the near future. And by the way, the lineup for this year is nothing short but impressive. Today's topic, as you've seen in the description, is all about data. You know, I mean, in this day and age, everybody's talking about smart this, intelligent that, Internet of Things over here, data analysis there, big data, you know. And there's a whole plethora of potential smart whatever. Also data. There is a lot of stuff hidden in there. And as you've already heard, if you've been listening for this podcast now for some time, in the episode with Richard Butcher, we were also talking about data. And not only data, but especially the power that lies within the data, and especially the hidden power, which has yet to be revealed. And I thought, hey, that's a very interesting topic to talk about. And so I'm very happy that today's guest is the perfect fit on that topic. And I'm glad to have him on the show. It's Michael Moffitt from CO3, who just recently was promoted there to be the CEO. So I'm very grateful that he'll be joining today. So there we go. Yes.
Hi, Christoph.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking your time and for being on the show today. Pleasure having you.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on, and thanks for the warm welcome. A lot to live up to, but we'll do our best.
Absolutely. Perfect. Yeah, looking forward to this conversation. And maybe can you give the audience a rough idea or a brief description about who you are, what you're doing? I think this always helps.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I'm Michael Moffitt. As Christoph so graciously said, I'm the new CEO of CO3. We're a data marketplace that specializes in IoT aggregation and advanced data. So I think, you know, hitting the topic of what we're discussing today, as in terms of, you know, my industry experience, I've been in logistics now for about the same time as you, a little over a decade. Working in various functions. I had the opportunity to work for a great logistics school and expediters for 6 years, and then made the jump into the logistics tech field with Uber Freight, and then with Sender as well. And so really getting into road freight logistics and FTL, which it's meant to be one of the easier pieces, but still has a ton of complexity. and then now, thankfully, getting into the data part, really looking forward to kind of what's coming next, especially with some of the data we can unlock.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you so much for the quick introduction. And it's always great to see to have people on the show with, you know, knowledge of the industry who know that how everything is moving. That really helps to align on the same page. And I've already had the first question for today, which comes from Benito. They want to put in. I want to know what telemetry is. So maybe you can help her out here.
Yeah. So telematics, I guess, for me is really it's a form of IoT. And so telematics are really devices, Internet of Things, connected devices that send data signals. And so these telematics are just individual devices. They can read or pull various data points, but really just a way to connect to the internet to push data.
Oh yeah. Okay. Okay. Excellent. So Benita, thank you. Thank you for the question. Okay. I hope this was helpful for you. Maybe let's just dive in. I think that's the perfect, let's say starting point or combination trigger point probably for the first, bigger topic, which, Internet of Things, you already alluded to that and telematics. So if we bring them together, and maybe we can have a little retrospective perspective here in terms of the evolution of connectivities, because these day and age, you probably know that better than I do, but everybody is talking about smart this, smart there, connective X, smart this, yeah. Internet of Things. I mean, can you give us an idea about the evolution on this side?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the IoT obviously is one of those buzzwords you've been hearing about for the better part of a decade. And it was just, it's just the idea that everything eventually is going to be connected to the internet. And what we've seen over the last 10 years is the reality, right? We've had a few phenomenon in technology of processing power has gotten exponentially cheaper over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Battery efficiency has increased greatly over the last 10 years. Data is much, much cheaper than it ever was. You know, we're running at 5Gs and much higher speeds than 10 years ago. Data storage is much cheaper. And so all of these, you can have this combination of things that are really connecting to create this sort of IoT network and the Internet of Things. And, you know, telematics is just one of those. And so it's really any sort of device that's sending a signal. I think that within logistics, this really took off, you know, late 2000s, early 2010s, where you started to see the promise of real-time visibility. GPS tracking was a big thing, right? And what we found at this nascent of IoT was that really didn't take much to send relevant data, something that somebody wanted, you know, a ping on a map, and it's just a small direction and few, data points. But I think what's happened though is we've seen an absolute explosion of these devices, and it's, you know, across all of our lives. I mean, from our computer phones to just about everything we're using. Even the semiconductor shortage that we've seen over the last couple of years is part and parcel because of this IoT explosion. So many things have to be connected to the internet now and producing signals. So, one of the issues that we've really seen is that with this hyper-production and so many of these companies that were taking advantage of this real-time visibility and this, you know, IoT really jumping on the bandwagon, you had a lot of great innovation, but it means you had a lot of innovators, and that creates complexity, right? You had so many, just thousands of companies that were putting devices wherever they could and trying to pull this data. So it really where it, you know, it comes from. And unfortunately, for the last 10 years, that's kind of where it's remained. Still a little bit tricky in some areas to improve on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And appreciate the roundup. I mean, as you already alluded to, especially within logistics, that's correct. Everybody came around all of a sudden, hey, real life, GPS there, you know, put everything on a map over here. And even up to the very day, you know, innovation keeps on going. And at one point you're even able to, you know, upload or download, depending on the side of the table that you're sitting. You're even able to, you know, download invoices, all sorts of reports, shipping related documents, you know, customs releases or customs release forms, whatever, right? So
there's a huge push for it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's kind of a funny thing I've been thinking about over the last few months, and especially as I've been working a little bit more in the data space, is, you know, with any technology, you kind of have that curve, right? You have the early adopters, and then you really have where it takes off, and you kind of get the trough of disillusionment. There's this whole cycle to, you know, these developments. Mm-hmm. And I had never really thought about it in logistics before, but we had been seeing it, you know, 10, 12, 13 years ago, they were talking about real-time visibility. And it seems like such an easy subject, right? Like, I know, you know, what that vessel is. I know what that airplane is. I know which truck it is. It should be so simple. But, you know,
right.
We've come to realize it's not quite that simple. Yeah.
Right. I also believe that, and maybe you can correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I do also believe that part of the challenge to actually bring everything together is also because most companies somehow are just operating on, how can I put this? You know, some for lack of a better term here, some island solution, meaning right. You have one provider for your ERP system, then you have one provider for the ocean tracking, if you even have one, or if you rely on internet homepages, whatever. Then you have a whole different integration with all these airlines and shipping lines themselves. Then you're also using different truckers, different trucking companies in all sizes with all their different systems on their own, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess one of the challenges that we really see and have throughout logistics, especially if we're talking about a globalization with all sorts of different modes of transports and different providers and whatever, and everybody comes along with their own solution. And how to properly integrate it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's really the absolute heart of the problem within logistics is, it's not the data. The data's there. It's been produced for a very long time. Even some of the more advanced data has been around a long time. It's just, we live in such a highly fractured market and industry. As you talked about, not even speaking about the multiple layers of a transport from, you know, rail out of China into the port and, you know, onto the boat and then, or aviation and road. But even if you just take the road logistics itself, the fracturation is amazing. You have all the different systems, like you said, the ERPs, the TMSs, all these various systems that people are using and pulling data from. You could have, you know, major shippers that have huge supply chains. They could be working mm-hmm. with 5, 10, 15, 20 different providers who are each working with 3 to 5 different, you know, systems, who have multiple different providers of data. And then you have mm-hmm. complexities of subcontracting and all these other things that really just the complexity is almost mind blowing. Sometimes we don't think about it that way, but there's so many silos and everything is so fractured in the way that we work now. Part of that is by design and others by complexity. But, you know, as we're going to really start to see some advances, we're going to have to kind of unify a little bit and cooperate a little bit better to bring forward, mm-hmm. you know, some of this data that's out there.
Absolutely. I mean, maybe also one part of clarification for people that or part of the audience that has never worked inside a logistics or forwarding company. I guess you could be easily tempted to think, hey, if I order whatever online, you know, I get the receipt for whatever, or the confirmation. It just left the warehouse. It's en route. It will be delivered, I don't know, tomorrow. And ideally, it gets delivered, I get the POD and also the invoice, you know. But oftentimes when we talk about B2B logistics on a corporate level, especially as Michael already alluded to, on different countries, maybe even different continents, That's a whole different topic, a whole different story.
Yeah, like you look at how complex Europe is already, right? And like, if you take FTL trucking, the forwarding structure is so complex, and it's born from the regionality, right? You know, we have a lot of amazing countries here. They all have their industries. They have, you know, their truckers and carriers that are out there doing a great job. You have the differences in cost structures from west to east, and the competition, the rotation. It's extremely complex because we have so many countries that had varying laws and ways of doing things. And so you just kind of birth from that and grows in complexity over time. So yeah, once you get out of the European Union and you start adding some additional complexity, it's we take it for granted. I mean, before I started in logistics, I remember one of the first interviews I had, I couldn't even conceptualize some sort of B2B logistics. Somebody was asking me, okay, we have this order, the order's ready. What's the first thing that happens? And I could hardly conceptualize a truck coming to pick something up and then take it to the airport and all that, you know, and not even understanding the complexity in between. So we definitely take it for granted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just want to give a quick shout out here to one of our, or to the audience. Hello, Martin. Thank you so much for joining in. Appreciate you. Thank you for your interest in this whole conversation. Pleasure having you. And of course, we've already had Benita. Also, shout out to Benita. Thank you so much for being on the show, for joining in, and for your interest on that. And with that being said, just want to circle back real quick on that we were just discussing, Michael. Because you also hear, especially when you're within the B2B market, many companies, and this could be either BCOs, shippers or actually owner of the goods, but this could be also various freight forwarders who are promoting their smart solutions, whatever that might be. And many of them talking, of course, about EDI, but others are also using APIs. And maybe you can help to understand the audience. Also, what's the difference in between of EDI and API?
Yeah, so it's a great question, and it's something that's thrown around a lot. I think, especially in, you know, logistics, EDI was the tech for, you know, 20 years. And that allowed essentially data transfer, but you know, that was pretty much it. It was a set, you know, sort of data, set information. I'm pushing this A to B. Something has arrived. Mm-hmm. It was some sort of trigger, and typically a small nomenclature or, you know, a few letters that would kind of push that across. But you couldn't really do much with it. Like, you wouldn't register it onto a database. It didn't really update anything. There was no action. It was just receiving a message, essentially, like an email. Mm-hmm. And you know, and that functioned for a really long time because you had just some larger groups that were just kind of pushing EDI to various companies, and you didn't need, you know, 20 years ago, nobody was really thinking about how can I leverage all this data that I'm, you know, pulling in on my supply chain to figure out where my issues are. Like, that's only come in the last 10 or 15 years, is, you know, is these companies have to reduce cost. So it didn't really matter. It was just, you know, I need that information. I want it real time. And so you kind of get this whole fictitious of real time visibility where, you know, in reality, what it was somebody probably keying in, you know, a code at the origin, and then that system would just kind of push it out and say, okay, it was real time, it's here. Even if that was 2 or 3 days ago, it didn't matter at that time, right? And so, yeah, EDI was really a simple way to push data and to give updates a little bit like an email. APIs are a lot more interesting. You know, something I had never really thought about before, I had the pleasure of working with couple of very smart people back at Expeditors, and he was talking to me about APIs in the early 2010s and talking about how the 2020s were going to be the decade of the API and the importance of that. And at the time, it didn't make any sense. Everybody's talking about apps, right? We had the smartphone for the iPhone for the last 2 or 3 years. It's app everything, app. And you got that in logistics as well. Like, you know, I worked for Uber. They have an amazing app. It's doing some great things sorry about that. Camera just turned off.
No worries.
They're doing some great things in, you know, in the US with the amazing app that they have. Mm-hmm. But What you end up having, though, is essentially a ton of companies that create apps, right? And so you have a highly fractured market that is, you know, completely, all of these companies, they really have a very small piece of the pie, right? And so you just have these web fronts, essentially, without the data behind them. And so the API, what I didn't understand at the time is there has to be a way to connect all of these apps and to make them useful. And so this API is really the decade where it allows us to connect platforms, it allows us to connect apps and databases, and do some really interesting thing where you can essentially update data, you know, so you can change databases in other centers and under other platforms, and really have a push-pull. So you can start to do some very interesting things with it. But really right now, what it's helping to do is aggregate a lot of these data sources. And that's the important part, because there's so many of them, and it's pretty complex on how to aggregate them. So the API is really a simple way to transfer data back and forth.
Would you say that, and question popping into my mind now, Michael, would you say that EDI, so to speak, as the dinosaur on possibilities, will slowly maybe fade out and will be replaced by API over the next whatever X years?
Yeah, so it really has to. EDI is still effective, and the problem, like any transition, is that when the majority is on something, it's very difficult to get everybody up to date, right? There are always kind of these critical areas where so many of these very large companies are working on EDI systems. You know, you have to kind of, you have to give it time to propagate and to start becoming something that's one, you know, these companies are going to invest in the time of engineering resources to build out APIs. And so you really have to build that use case. But APIs are just so much more interesting. And it's right now, it's really been like a bit of a nascent point of the API. Right now it's being used to like pull this data and manipulate a few things. But, you know, going forward, IoTs with the right APIs could do some very interesting things as well. Instead of just sending data, you could actually send data back to that IoT to do something, right? And to operate something. So you really get into a position where you can kind of, it's conversations between machines, and a little bit up to your imagination as to, you know, what you can do with that exchange of information. So it's going to be key for what's happening, especially to see autonomous driving coming out and autonomous trucks. Having these APIs and the ability to be able to transfer this data at those speeds is just it's absolutely essential. So I think the rest will phase out. But you know, logistics used to get a hard time about, you know, still using faxes even in the 2010s. So you know, it takes a while, but we'll get there.
Well, German government is still using fax. They're just looking for an additional, I believe, 80 machines or something. So I guess logistics is not the only one lagging behind.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one of the an interesting thing that I learned recently was one of the major problems with data storage is actually advances in technology, right? So we have tons of data that's stored on like those old disks or tapes or all of this stuff. And we're getting to a point where there's not very many machines that are actually able to read this data and actually get anything out of it, right? And so you have this whole industry updating data. You know, now we've gone to cloud computing, which is huge, but it's incredible. You have that rate of growth and just keeping up with how to read that data and interpret it.
It's actually a great point, because just because you brought that up right now, Michael, I've never thought about it either. I mean, of course, I know, I still know, you know, tapes, I even know vinyls and compact discs or CDs, you know, back in the day, which was the thing. Exactly. Then now, of course, USB sticks and as you already alluded to, the cloud storage, right, which is a whole different topic. But like, I just want to finish off the thing on EDI and API, because I think that's really a key that you mentioned out there. So while EDI or information transmitting was or is basically still a one-way street, API could have the potential to become both sender and receiver of data, right?
Exactly. And so, you know, this gets really interesting, I think, when, so let's, you know, if we look at the visibility space, right, in this data transfer, we don't talk about all the advanced data, but just, you know, data of those pings and some of the complexity we have in our market. So part of the complexity of getting good tracking and good data to the right people at the right time is a lot of data protection laws that we have, which we can go into probably later. But the issue with that, though, is that for it to be compliant, you need some sort of trigger, right? Like, we need to know when a certain company needs to be seeing the real-time visibility of a certain carrier. Now, there has to be some sort of passage of information from them as to, all right, you know, is it geographic? Is it time monitored? Is there some sort of trigger that we know when to share that data with that person while we protect the GDPR rights of the driver and the individual that's in there? And then at the same time, what sort of triggers can we give or what kind of information can be passed that would update a system? And so then you can get into some really fun advanced data stuff like gross train axle weight, things like that, where you could start to show, you know, loading and unloading. So you can have that, it pushes that, you know, back up to the shipper. It can trigger something within their system. Or, you know, if we're talking about like a lot of the platforms and the freight forwarders, really where they have their TMSs or their FMSs, you know, you have this exchange of data and you can start to really automate a lot of things, which becomes very interesting in terms of how do you grow your business without having to grow your headcount at the same rate, right? How do you grow 10x your business when growing your headcount 5x?
I think that's an especially interesting point that you mentioned, Michael. If you take a look onto more or less global demographics, right? I mean, of course, there are some countries that are not really falling into this, but just talking about Germany, but also Europe as such, birth rate is on the decline. So less and less young people are coming up. But we still have, obviously, a huge amount of freight, whether it's just and really, it's just if we just take a look onto the road, within the European Union, I mean, that's crazy, you know, talking about not even just machinery, but just think about tomatoes, vegetables, fruits, whatever. Those are by a large amount moved solely by a truck, right? So as you as you just mentioned, I do believe that this is really an interesting point to how to serve your clients wherever they might be located, right? Without maybe even necessarily have to grow the headcount of the people simply because the API data connection with ideally A to Z, meaning source until store or warehouse, whatever, would interact with in between. Hey, so X is ready. Hey, X was picked up by the truck Z, you know? Yeah. Oh, truck Z just arrived at wherever, right? I mean, wow, think about the possibility. Incredible.
Yeah, it's you know, it's something that I think a lot of very good logistics companies do. They tend to try to work by exception, right? When you have massive scales of, you know, supply chains and global supply chains, you just can't focus on everything. Even with very large data sets and a lot of the automation, it's still a very complex issue to solve. There's, you know, human factors. There's all kinds of things that really make those sort of prediction machines a little bit difficult. But you really have this built-in complexity into the whole thing that's incredibly important, but it really facilitates a lot of things that we have been talking about doing for the last 10 or 15 years. And, you know, maybe one of the best examples of, you know, this decline and being able to continue or grow things, you know, we look at the carrier shortage that has been talked about for as long as I can remember and probably longer than you know, and it's been the same problems. We have a lot more people that are retiring than are joining. It's not a very sexy industry. It is a very difficult job. You know, there's a lot of hours. And so we talk about this 30% driver shortage, but if you look at estimations of, you know, how much of the capacity is actually used and how many empty kilometers, based on those estimations, they start to balance themselves out, but you have to find some efficiency gains, right? And so being able to leverage the data that you can start to automate these things and start to work through them will help us to bridge some of these gaps. But, you know, and that's really not using very sophisticated data right now. There's some stuff out there that you can start to use and incorporate that can really show some incredible efficiency changes.
Actually, that's a good point here, because I want to drag over a question that we just received in here. I believe it's Martin asking, we have to remember that apps serve together in the process of demand, delivery, and distribution to people. Are we close to seeing a Netflix system on a global scale?
That's a great question. My best guess is no. The reason is interoperability is already a big problem between normal companies, right? You don't like certain companies want to corner a market more than kind of share it out. But if you get into normal markets, it's very easy to have a dominant market share. In logistics, it's just not the case. It is so extremely fractured that your biggest players have single digit percentile, you know, market shares as dominant players. And so, you know, you have a lot of interoperability or problems with interoperability. And you know, you've seen this with some initiatives that have gone off where, you know, companies were looking to set up the association that was going to be the platform of everything, this thing that was going to be the blockchain solution of everything. And they are great solutions. And the technology is amazing. The people that work there are brilliant. But nobody wants to give up those rights to not be that top platform, right? Everybody wants to be that main app, wants to be that main platform, because there's a ton of money into it. So interoperability is really a problem and something I think that will continue to be an issue. But it doesn't mean that you can't have 1,000 apps or 1,500 apps and each one can serve their purpose. It's really the important part is how interoperable is the data? How can we make use of that data? How can we make it available? And how can we make it consumable by the right demographics that will be able to find a trend or be able to, you know, to do things, you know, interesting things with their supply chains? Because you can do it in various levels of complexity, right? You can go from a single warehouse to a region to, you know, a full shipper to a country, and it just kind of keeps growing in complexity and how big you want to try to take it.
I think that's maybe also first of all, I appreciate you answering Martin's question. And also, Martin, thank you so much for asking this question, because this is exactly why we're coming together here to, you know, exchange knowledge, grow and learn together. And along, right? But I was just thinking, Michael, I think because that's also something that we discussed prior to this call, the topic of data silos. And I believe that this fits in right now probably the best. So yeah. I just want to throw this out there. If you can just, you know, share some thoughts about data silos, etc. I think it's helpful.
Yeah, for sure. So data silos is another complex one too, because you have like fractured markets of data providers, right? You can have thousands of different telematics providers and, you know, various functions, all different kinds of modes of transport. And then you get a few other data silos. You can get data silos essentially of maybe IoT aggregators that, you know, have a specific platform, and then that becomes kind of one of those where you have multiple platforms that are doing that, and none of them want to share data with the other. So you create already a data silo there. So you've taken kind of already a very small piece and broke it into smaller pieces. And then we also have a lot of anti-competition fears within logistics, which were valid. You know, this was a very complex industry that operated in a lot of different countries. There's a lot of, you know, strange frameworks that make it that, you know, you should have a very strong anti-competition within the industry. But then you have these industries that are absorbing this data, and then they don't want to share anything outside of their network, right? Everybody wants to kind of keep that closed and keep their business secrets and pricing and all that stuff, which is, again, very valid. And then, so on top of that, though, is that you'll have data silos within shippers, right? So you might have a shipper, as we were talking about, they might be working with 10 or 15 different freight forwarders. Each one has their little bit of pie. And then you just kind of end up with essentially a bunch of a bunch of data that really can't communicate. But where we're seeing really, I think our biggest complexity is really within the various logistics actors or platforms right now. It goes back to what we were talking about. Everybody wants to have kind of a dominant platform or the platform to aggregate all other platforms, but nobody else wants to play together to, you know, give those companies the right to do that. So it's also very important in terms of GDPR and data safety. So there's some good reasons to have it there. But these silos are very, very complex. The good news is I think that there has been more and more of a shift in the way that the industry is looking at this. And they're starting to, I say starting, they've been thinking about this topic for a while, but I think, you know, a lot of how this trickles down is kind of research and innovation. And then, you know, it takes a while to kind of come down the pipe and into really usability. But I'm hearing a lot more cooperation, which is a really good thing. It's companies trying to say, how can we cooperate together so that we can make this data available, make it useful, not just sit on it? And so there are a lot of things that, you know, data spaces that are being created. There's a lot of companies and EU associations, for example, that are setting up around how to set up a framework, both, you know, hardware plus also the framework of agreements to how do we share this data? What data can we share? How can we make it more available? So it's great that we're thinking about it. And the EU is really pushing for increasing data transfer between companies, between states. They're investing a lot of money into the research around this. So I think it's moving in the right direction. But for now, the silos are, again, typically single-digit percentiles. And it's very hard to create any sort of change when you're looking at, you know, a tiny sliver of the pie. It's it makes it tough. So these data silos are really an important roadblock and challenge right now in the industry, but hopefully we're moving in the right direction at least.
I hear. Yeah. Hopefully many folks listening today or even later on the show, as this will be also available on YouTube and on Spotify afterwards. No matter when you're listening into this, I do also believe that there are indeed also some positive developments. And I personally also have the feeling that also larger BCOs, meaning importing or exporting companies, are also, I mean, they are not taking leaps, but steps. You know, now and then you hear some things, hey, we have to regularly update certain documents, whatever. Next thing you know, hey, do you have any option to connect with us on our system so we can have your data right transferred into the system? Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, hey, couldn't we somehow put our supplier, our regular supplier, also in this electronic chain, allow you, your freight forwarder or shipping line or however you want to call them, so that you receive the important or the necessary informations much earlier? Because back when I started out in this industry, as I said, roughly a decade ago, the way to contact your forwarder or shipping line was, I write an email. Hey, your shipping line, your freight forwarder, I need X amount of containers or whatever it was there. Ideally on the shipping or on the vessel Y in 2 weeks. Please confirm. Some were even using Faximal back then. I remember that.
I know. Yeah, I remember just seeing the number of people that worked just out of their email box. That was their workflow, you know, and a lot. I think a lot of people became victim, you know, fell victim to it. But not sure it's really improved either. To be honest, I still feel like people are flooded by emails, and it's have to be selective. But yeah, you are seeing this change, which is great. I think that, you know, maybe one of the stranger things is, as we're starting to face greater and greater challenges in the supply chain, that now the question is not just about company X being able to show that their thing is going to show up on time. It's more about like, oh man, we got a huge climate crisis in front of us. What do we, you know, what can we do to address this? then there's more onus on, all right, we really need to cooperate because it's bigger than just logistics. This is, you know, like a global problem, or, you know, we can see the security of our supply chains over the last, you know, year and a half and how brittle things are and what, you know, what an impact it can have on society either way. And we went through COVID and then everything was stocked up and then everything's out of the shelves and, you know, semiconductors. And so there's a lot of these things that are happening that I think are getting enough momentum and enough investment now that things are starting to pick up pace. And I've seen some really exciting things in terms of at least the conversations so far and some of the projects that have been under the Horizon project. You can really see some innovative things that are coming. But again, you know, like the best AI model is, if it doesn't have data, it really can't do much. So we have to kind of figure out that space, I think.
Right. And just as an add-on, because you just touched base on a very interesting point here, Michael, I've read that throughout the last year, even big shipping lines, talking about Hapag-Lloyd, for instance, who are wanting to upgrade all or the entire container fleet onto smart containers, whatever that might be. I think that's a whole different discussion. But boom, all of a sudden, boom, you have it right there. You know, it's out there. You see SIM, which is going into the same direction. They just started off with their reefer fleet, which is also an important topic. So as you already alluded to, there are occasionally some changes, but nothing on the entire scale.
I think changes like this are sneaky, especially in technology. It's amazing how you kind of get this disillusionment of how quickly things start to change. And, you know, you talk about like Hapag-Lloyd, and they say, okay, well, we're going to roll out our whole new, you know, float of containers as smart containers. You know, as they renew, essentially they have these containers that have these IoT devices now. But, you know, 10 years ago, the cost for that would have been outrageous, not to mention, you know, battery life if you have to have one. There's so many different things that now are making that possible that 15 years ago was only small scale. It's, you know, so it is incredible to see. But I think you touched on a good point really around these data sources, right? Where before it was all between different freight forwarders and they would update their keys, and that's how you had kind of visibility on ocean. And they kind of thought, well, you could track the vessel. That's a great thing. We're already tracking them, you know, pass that information on, you know, EDI and shipping. Obviously, shipping lines are huge, and EDI, I think, in pushing that technology for a very long time. But now you're seeing that these OEMs and these major companies, the ocean liners and you know, flight has been on this for a while, but they understand that they are really the producers of the data, right? They're the primary level of that data. Whatever they're pushing out is directly from them. And so you have, you know, Hapag system, or you have, you know, maybe a Maersk or MSC as they start to do more of those things as well. And so, yeah, you get, I think that's been an interesting push as well over the last few years. And it's been big in the trucking industry as well for about better part of the decade.
Right. Right. That's also an interesting point. But before we delve into that, also quick shout out to Nerf, who's joining us. Nerf, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for your interest on that. Pleasure having you. And yeah, if you have any questions, just shoot them out. We are right here to talk about it. Appreciate you, sir. Thank you. And a topic that I also wanna touch base on. Continuing with the positive developments here, and you already touched base on that earlier as well with regards to the EU, because we also know that the EU is quite strict when it comes down of data protection and data privacy and all of that. But there was also some movement and some research and funding they're doing, right?
Yeah, they've been doing a ton, actually. And, you know, I think part of this was with some of the investment they did during COVID. And, you know, that time, I can't remember the numbers, but it's farming, you know, just crazy numbers. But, you know, with that, they've had really a lot of funding and innovation and research. But again, as you have more of a push towards greenification, electrification, reduction of carbon, need for new infrastructure, it's kind of hitting a lot of perfect points within the logistics industry right now, where this research, I think, is coming in a very good time. But you're also, they're understanding that for these smart systems to work, you have to have a solid framework for data exchange while still protecting the GDPR rights of the individuals that are impacted. And this is a really tricky problem. I think already GDPR is really not very well understood, and I'm far from, you know, an expert, but it makes it extra complex when you have to think about how do you share this data between companies. Already that's a huge deal that goes against a lot of what, you know, logistics has been about for the last, you know, hundreds of years, maybe. I was going to say decades, but, you know, the industry is slightly older than that. On top of that, then you also have data exchange between countries, right? And luckily within the European Union, those things float pretty easily. But when you're talking about logistics, not really. And part of the problem is a lot of manually entered data. There's still some things, maybe we can go into data quality later, but but what they're really trying to promote is this exchange of data. How can we set up a framework to do this either anonymous in a way that, you know, helps train, you know, algorithms or helps make predictive analysis or understand where we need infrastructure? Or how can we actually exchange real data, especially as we start to push into initiatives of like ECMRs and everything being digitized, where, you know, you can't have a fully digital supply chain unless everything is digital. And that means the data is flowing, right? So how do we do that in a way that we can protect people, but also, you know, make that data available? So it's a strange subject, I think. And the complexity is mind blowing because you really have to, you know, think about the individuals that is impacted by that, right? And, you know, the drivers that are there and the amount of time and how many different shippers that they could work with on a various time. You know, if you have a 400 or 500 trucks, I mean, you could do tons of shippers, right? And I'm not going to throw out any numbers, but it just, there's a lot of complexity there. So they're really trying to set up kind of that framework. There's like a GAIA-X framework that in data exchange that's really interesting, and a couple others that have been out there, and they're starting to be used more and more, I think, by some of these data sharing spaces. They're leveraging that already this, you know, framework exists for how to exchange the data. Now it's more about like, what data can we exchange and how should we do that? And under what pretexts, who is it beneficial to? Is it just beneficial to somebody who's consuming those goods, or, you know, can it be used all over the place? But it's really interesting to see that. So there's lots of Horizon grants that are going out. The Horizon program is huge. I think that the new, I'm not following this nearly as closely as I should, because we have been involved in some Horizon applications, but the 2023-2024 schedule is coming out, I think this month, it might even be tomorrow. And so there you can really see the subjects. You have a lot of incredible, I think, interworkings that are happening, because you're getting a lot of like really switched on research and institutions and universities and some really very intelligent people that are working, you know, hand in hand with some of the best and brightest of the logistics fields and associations. And so you're starting to see some really cool things. It's still a little nebulous, but I think it's on track for what we want to hit in 2027 or 2030 or whatever.
Absolutely. And I also think, and that's something that you alluded to in the beginning, to Michael, we also have to understand that back in the 2000 or even 2010 years, you know, we were basically flat in terms of the possibilities, capabilities, and also of course the amount of money that the company, whether it was a forwarder or also an OEM, was willing to spend in actually just to get this information. And a lot of them back then was considered more or less unimportant, for lack of a better term. I know it's oversimplified, so I'm sure a lot of people will jump into the comments, oh, how can you say that? But back then, the globalization and the connection back then wasn't just not on the level that we are operating today, you know. The demand for information wasn't there either.
No, that's, exactly. That's you know, it's only grown exponentially in speed since 2010, right? Like,
right.
people are more and more connected to every bit of information they have. So the information getting there quicker is more important than it ever was. And already in the 2010s, it was super important compared to, you know, the early 2000s. So it's incredible to see that evolution. But at the same time, I kind of feel a little bit naive in the fact that I'm just, you know, kind of realizing how much of a hype cycle we went through with all of this and mm-hmm. where that disappointment has come from. You know, it just kind of seemed like this frustrating problem, but now it's like, oh, well, I can actually understand that, like, we're still going through an evolution of how this data is produced. And then that evolution helps push out, you know, how that data can be produced. And then that changes kind of, you know, the way that it's used. So, yeah, it takes a while.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what actually speaks for the industry, and that's part of why I just mentioned this, is now we are not anymore starting from zero, but we are starting way up higher, and we have, as you already alluded to, more possibilities, more capabilities. You know, I mean, just think about this one. You know, this small piece of tech, you know, which has more capabilities in there than the first space shuttles ever had.
Yeah, it's
a short amount of years, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, it's absolutely mind-blowing. And I think, you know, I'm a bit of a tech geek. I love learning about this stuff. One of my favorite, I guess I would call him a philosopher, is Ray Kurzweil, the guy that works at Google, does a lot of their AI. But you know, you don't really see the stacking of the complexity, right? Like, you just kind of take a phone as a phone, but you don't understand, like, all of the evolution and innovation that's gone into making, you know, computing power millions of times greater than it was 20 or 30 years ago, or even less. You know, the efficiency and transfer of data, the, you know, how it's getting cheaper and cheaper to actually transfer data, the storage, the... And then on top of that, then you get, you know, things like this, where there's so much more knowledge sharing now, and it's happening so quick. And then you get the data transfers. And so you really do get an evolution that's pretty incredible. But reality takes a little while to set in. And there's always that gap between, you know, like, what is possible versus what's really happening and what is possible. And so I think is the more that you understand kind of where you are on that scale, which can be hard because you hear a lot of buzzwords and crazy talk all the time, and it's fun to listen to, but, I think there has been an incredible amount of change, and, you know, just the fact that you can have, you know, essentially every container ship in the world connected to the internet is pretty mind-blowing. I mean, knowing where everything is, the conditions of it at all times, then that leads to some cool stuff.
Absolutely. And also, if I take a quick look onto our comment section here, just Benita said, oh yeah, it's mind-blowing, and there are a lot of movement, a lot of, you know, tension going on. You can feel that. I also want to highlight Nerve's comment here real quick. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. I think that we will need collaborative logistics to be the new norm if we want a globally approved and verified system to release the siloed data and increase interoperability in order to tap into all of this data that sits in Excel documents somewhere on some server or Google Drive. I don't know, maybe I'm wishfully thinking for people to play together, but I think that we will need it.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think that's the utopia we're all shooting for, but you know, it's hard to get people to play together.
Absolutely. I agree on that. And maybe also one question that many people have in mind, and you just touched base on that with the GDPR and everything, and if we think back in other instances in other industries, I still remember a couple of years ago, might have been a decade ago, where there was a public outcry when it came public that Facebook was storing the data in somewhere on, I don't know, Ireland or wherever this was, and even up to the very date, you probably know more than ever. You're also reading a lot about phishing, spam, cyber criminality, cyber attacks, you know, even onto ports, onto vessels, whatever. So I do believe that many folks are also, I'm not sure if worried is the right word here, but at least concerned about data protection. What's your take on that, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. It's essentially important. I think that despite the challenges that some GDPR regulations present in you know, flow of data in business, which is, you know, one thing, it's very much a commercial subject. Data protection is absolutely key. I mean, you think about how vulnerable people can be, and if you understand very few things about their habits, what they're doing, it doesn't take much to paint a very vivid picture of an individual. So you have to be careful of that, respectful of those people's rights, their rights to, you know, own their own data and do whatever they want without, you know, that monitoring or repercussions of that monitoring. I think that when you look at really, you know, all the stuff that goes into the very large platforms with billions of users, there's really a risk there of that's a lot of information. Now, what can you do with it? You know, you saw everything that happened. I don't want to go into that stuff, but you know, it can be really dangerous to understand, you know, an individual. And so I think that data protection is super important. Now, luckily, the data that we're talking about in logistics in most cases has to do with geographic location of an individual, still important to protect. But a lot of the data that's being produced and that's usable is not based on an individual. It's based on an asset, a truck, you know, a frigo, you know, whatever. So the data, you know, the individual just happens to be in that data mix. And so you have to make sure that person is protected and also find a way to make that data available and usable, which is a bit of a complex challenge, but it's worth figuring out.
Absolutely. And I think it gets even more complexer, or the complexity itself increases if you're going out from domestic in a country into domestic Europe or the US or domestic Canada, whatever, yeah, up to maybe globally, because there are also all sorts of different standards, all sorts of different data protection requirements, privacy requirements, et cetera, et cetera. So I do definitely understand that this in and for itself is a pretty huge challenge to come on the stage.
It is. Like, it's, you know, I used to joke about it because I was in global logistics and it's very complex, all the different countries and all of that. And, you know, you think about road transport, for example, and you think, wow, I mean, this is simple. It's A to B. You know, somebody grabs a truck and he just runs it from there to there and very easy. But the complexity in this industry is just absolutely mind-blowing. Yeah, I mean, you just so many different layers of people, the regionality, the way where data is produced from, who it's going to, who actually has the ownership of that data, and through what chain of actors have ownership, what responsibilities do they have to protect that data. It's meant to be the, you know, the simple part, the A to B, right? You're already home, you're within a country, within a region, and still it's incredibly difficult. I don't think people appreciate how intricate logistics is in general.
I don't think so either. Maybe a short glimpse throughout Corona or throughout the pandemic, when they noticed that, I don't know, toilet paper was not available, or semiconductors, or I don't know, refrigerator took like what, a year to be delivered. So that's maybe the only part when they realized, oh wow, wait a minute, there's actually more to it than just a buzzword of globalization that I believe still means different things or different concepts to each and everybody, especially if you're not into logistics, right?
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, when it works, you don't think about it. Just like anything, you know, the banking system works, you don't think about it. You know, it's only when your money doesn't come, you're thinking, oh man, where's the problem? Now what's going on, right? And it's the same thing with our goods. But I think it did a funny thing. I had, you know, for as long as I've worked in this industry, I've tried to explain to my parents what it is. And it wasn't until, you know, the canal blocking and all that stuff that my mom even understood what logistics was. And it was just so weird that, you know, it was so much in the media, got so much attention. On top of it, it had already gotten a lot of funding from VCs over the last, you know, 10 years, a lot of innovation that was coming. And so it kind of created this perfect storm of like, oh man, this is really, yeah, very fragile. And so you started to see a lot of the complexity, not only of the supply chain or of the logistics part of it, but of the supply chains, right? And so you have an iPhone, there's like, you know, it comes from, I don't know, 50 different countries, the parts, and then they're all, you know, manufactured and assembled. It's, right. It's incredibly intricate. Right. And so if you have just the smallest bit that breaks down, it's not just an A to B, it's, you know, 100 different entries and new consolidation. Mm-hmm. So there's all those things that, go into it that that are hard to see. And when they break, they really rear their nasty head. It's incredible how mm-hmm. something so small, one little bit, can set it all off. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think you were talking about the semiconductor. No, I think that's kind of a whole different story, because I mean, that's really a very, very complex subject with, you know, geopolitics and everything else that's going into it. But the interesting thing is we can't get any goods, right? And one of the things that's been impacted the most is trucks. You know, the, mm-hmm. the rolling park of trucks is backed up. I think it's 18 months or something like that, you know, on average. Mm-hmm. And so one of the funny things that we're looking at is we really feel like these OEMs are kind of the key. They're really a primary data source. But even the renewal of their park so that you can have better IoTs and better connectivity is being affected by logistics, right? And so you kind of have this vicious mm-hmm. circle of like the, you know, the mm-hmm. trucks can't get it there, but you can't get the new trucks. Or you look at this company called ASML, which is a Dutch company. And so this company, mm-hmm. for example, is the only company in the world that builds the machines complex enough to build the very, very high tech semiconductors, like, you know, 5 nanometers, the stuff that's really next level tech. And the funny thing is they can't get semiconductors to build more machines. You know, like there was just this thing where they're delayed with their machines because they're waiting for semiconductors to kind of, and so you just get this weird vicious loop. But anyways, I thought it was interesting.
Absolutely. And as always, the question is, okay, what is first, right? Hen or the egg? And I believe it's a little bit with this as well. And also if we transfer it over to our topic in terms of the data, right? I mean, you were, because we have 30 minutes left here. You have already alluded to the importance of API, right?
Yeah.
And connecting everything, you know, and getting everybody within the supply chain on the same table, on the same platform, right? Being able to use, send out, receive the same data and also the same information as such, meaning even the data as such, it's everything dot, for instance, XSLX for an Excel data, dot PDF, whatever, because otherwise the program might not be able to read it, right? You also touch base on connecting aggregated information with the IoT and everything. And I think it's also important to talk about the OEM as such, because I believe a lot of the demand that will be driving exactly this development will, based on my opinion, be driven by a large degree by OEMs. What are your thoughts about that, Michael?
Yeah, I think they're a really interesting source, and you know, could be a bit of a, at least a help to some, you know, some of the issues we have right now with data and data quality, especially, right? So like, if you look at the industry data and what's being used, we've gone into a lot of it, like the silos and the complexity, and that is just a piece of it, because that's the actual, like, you know, automatically produced data. The problem mm-hmm. is, though, is that since a lot of these companies don't have, you know, full visibility on their data, or there's holes in this data, there's a lot of manually entered data as well. And you talked about G Sheets mm-hmm. earlier, you know, I think that came up, and that's a whole different thing, where you have kind of interoperability of what kind of data are you storing? Where are you storing it? Are you able to use it? And you get really an industry that has a tendency to hire, you know, individuals just for data entry, whether that be manually overridden entry or, you know, data entry itself, because they don't have either the connectivity or they're missing that ping or that signal, right? Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, right there already you have a huge data quality issue. And then so if you take away the manually entered data, which I would venture to say is not a majority, but it has to be in the 30 or 40%. You end up with kind of this manually overridden data. And then you have all the IoTs that you have to aggregate. And so again, you have like data quality where the ping rate will be 15 minutes on one, 30 minutes on another. They don't have the same nomenclatures. They don't have like the same data points, right? And oftentimes the data that's being pulled is either scraped off of a TMS somewhere. So, you know, a carrier will have their TMS, they'll let them connect in and they'll scrape that off. So it's not even actually originally pulled from the device. It might just be the GPS signal, you know, from this other thing. So there's a, you know, data quality issue. And then you get really the APIs that are set up. So they're set up with different endpoints and nomenclatures. So you have to keep up that complexity, because if that changes, you also have to change your API. It's very complex. And so you've had some great data aggregators for a long time, visibility platforms that have done a great job of really aggregating very complex systems and these number of devices. But again, there's that piece of complexity of a lot of different devices, different APIs, and then the subcontracting where you're probably not talking to the data owner. He's working with someone who's working with somebody who's the real data owner, right? So all that complexity, we think that with the OEMs, the difference is that they're all trucks, right? They're all the Scanias, the Volvos, the Manns, DAFs that are out there, and there's a limited source of them. And so you're kind of reducing some of that fracturation, but they're also a primary data source, which is interesting because, like, instead of just having a GPS signal or direction or speed, essentially, you know, hooking up a cheap telephone to, you know, to a truck and then reading the GPS signal, what you're getting now is you're getting hundreds of sensors that are on these trucks, right? And trailers as well, which we haven't really gone into, but trailers doing some interesting things.
Right.
And so you get this evolution of like trucks and truck manufacturers that are going more green, going more digital, trying to work on autonomous vehicles. And so those things mean that the data that they can produce is becoming more important. So they're producing more of this data. And so you have all these data points, these sensors that you can start to do some really interesting things as well, because you can get all these readings off these trucks. You can get, you know, how the truck is reacting, how it's being driven, the engine class, the fuel consumption, carbon emissions. And so that really starts to become insightful data that the industry can use to tackle some of these major issues that are, you know, facing our industry. I think it's a very interesting prospect, and, you know, there, a lot of them are catching on to this. You know, but it's taken a little while. This data's been here. You know, they're producing tons and tons of data every year with all of their trucks, hundreds of thousands each, you know. Less than 10% of it's being used. So it's just there. And so it's available, but, you know, it has to kind of get to market, and, you know, there's all this complexity that goes into our system. But it's I really feel it's kind of the solution. You know, you've seen it with like air cargo, where you're getting the info directly from the airline, directly from the plane. You know what I mean? Like it's so easy to track. Ocean liner, same thing. We were just talking about it. Connected devices everywhere. You're getting the stuff directly from Hapag-Lloyd or MSC or Maersk. And so we feel really the OEMs are the same thing. You've seen it in other data industries, you know, small vehicles, vans, stuff like that, where you have, you know, Amazon service providers, for example, that are tracking real time, because they're just tracking it direct from the car. It's very easy to connect, you know, reduced number of carriers. I think that's really going to be the way to go. The other interesting thing about OEMs is interoperability. So like they've agreed, I think it was early 2000s, on a data standard called RFMS. And so that means that they all have kind of common nomenclatures, similar data points, which makes kind of this aggregation much easier and easier to use overall. And then you have trailers that have come into it, OEM trailers. They were a little bit behind the curve, I think, in terms of the trucks, because the trucks had, you know, all the mechanics and everything that they needed to monitor. And so it made sense to have that device. Right. But in the trailers, I think they've really done a great job over the last couple of years of accelerating this, because they understand now that it's no longer about just tracking a dot on a map. It's showing data and conditions of valuable goods. That's what people are shipping, right? They're shipping valuable goods, their vaccines, their toilet paper, their whatever, but they understand the value of that. And so they've been really ramping up data and IoT telematics in their trailers as well. So the really cool thing is, like, you can get all the conditions on the load. You can get all the information about the truck. You can have that together or separate, right? So, like, responding to, you know, reduction in carbon and increased rail usage, right? You could have essentially the truck and the trailer gets put onto the train. You can still track it, you know, through its train tracks, connected onto the other truck, because you're, you know, you're able to communicate to these two vehicles at the same time. And so you can do some cool stuff like that. And then as well, you know, especially with high value cargo, you can monitor the conditions. You can know, you know, what's happening, what the temperature is, humidity, all those things that, you know, have been tracked in Frigos, I think, for a long time, but it's just making sense of that data. So I really, you know, I think OEMs are going to be a big part of the solution going forward. They're driving a lot of the innovation. And so, especially as autonomous vehicles start to become more of a thing, they'll want to be, you know, front and center on the data picture, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also linked to one of the previous episodes where I had Mr. Richard Butcher online, he was also talking about the importance of data for the future, also in order to drive sustainability. I mean, I think everybody who's listening to today's show will be able to relate somehow, especially if he's from the industry, right? I mean, the best example is still, you have a load of goods going from A to B, and more or less at the same time, you also have a load of goods originating in B or very close to B. Yet, a truck will appear from, I wouldn't say out of nowhere, but it's actually not that rare when the next truck will have to travel a couple of miles or kilometers, doesn't matter, in order to pick the goods up, which in essence could have been picked up by the truck that was already going to be, right? Yeah. So I do hear what you say, and I believe that there is indeed a huge amount of information hidden there, and especially to hear that currently roughly 10% of information is actually being used in one way or another. Crazy to me.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, like, the warehousing thing is such an interesting point because it's such a bottleneck at so many places, right? Like, you have a very large company that's shipping something. Most typically, they don't run that warehouse. You know what I mean? It's most typically, it's not the freight forwarder either. Or, you know, it kind of is a couple layers down the chain. So you have warehouse management systems that are typically pretty regional, local. You have some big ones that do some great stuff. But already, again, interoperability between, like, you know, SKU level data that goes into the warehouse to the truck itself and that transfer of data is just not really happening right now. So you get a lot of companies that, yeah, there might be filling up a third of their truck or half their truck, or really have huge bottlenecks where people are arriving late or too early, and just not, that data is not coming back. And it goes to kind of the manually entered data we were talking about earlier, where on top of it being maybe manually entered by the freight forwarder if they couldn't get the info out of the GPS, it's also typically being monitored by the shipper and the receiver. But in most cases by hand, and then they go and they, you know, compare that data by hand, and, you know, this one's got me arriving an hour before. Well, I thought I arrived on time, and so on top of that, it's just, you know, the amount of data that's out there, especially manual, is, you know, it's making things difficult.
Plus, in addition to that, I think everybody can relate to this one as well. You get an information that, I don't know, you're able to pick up the goods wherever it might be. Let's say between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. And next thing you know, truck pulls up. Oh, yeah, not on Fridays. Oh, yeah, not on Mondays either, because they just start, I don't know, 3 p.m. their shift, whatever it might be. Right, so you also have those discrepancies, which at the end of the day also cost someone a ton of money, because someone has to pay either the debt freight or the detention waiting at the site, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's it. Like, I don't even, you know, there's so many, especially with carriers, that would be really interested in understanding, you know, how where are they getting stuck? You know, I know a lot of them know this. So you should see how some carriers can really map things out in their minds. It's mind blowing, but having that little bit of understanding of, well, you know, maybe I should have charged extra money because my truck was sitting there too long and I just didn't know about it. Right. And being able to have that information is difficult. A lot of them, if they are tracking it by hand, again, they're hired somebody to do it. So you have kind of a cost that's there. You have to, you know, earn more than that cost. Or the shippers, where they put out these, you know, P&L budgets for their transport, X millions or whatever. And a lot of times they don't factor in accessorials. Those come as an afterthought, you know, some 50 euros here, 100 euros there, a couple hundred euros there. And it can really have a huge impact on the overall cost on that P&L. But the warehouse management is so complex. You know, you have, even within one big shipper, you might have, they grew through acquisition. So they had like a bunch of different smaller companies that had working with these warehouses, had a, you know, way of working, no communication, all this. So we have a long way to go, but I think that the utopian outlook is, if you have some of this stuff where you have primary data sources, so directly from the warehouse, directly from the OEMs, directly from the shippers, you have low latency where you have these API connections, they're able to communicate back and forth. You can start to update some of these things and to drive more autonomy and, you know, autonomous driving, whatever that's going to take over the next 10 or 20 years. But you start to see why the interoperability is so important with the data, because you're going to need this data to be able to update, you know, an IoT device that'll change the temperature in a frigo, for example, and make sure that the truck is driving fast enough or, you know, within the right chain. So it'll be a big part of kind of creating that utopia, I think, as we start to figure out some of the data sharing and interoperability.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely with you. And also, if we're thinking about customs, you know, for instance, a load has to go from Italy through Switzerland, which is not part of the European Customs Union. So you need an additional multi-stop. You require additional documents, etc. Now, just bear with me on that utopian thing. How about that? The trailer gets loaded, sends off an information to either the driver, dispatcher, forwarder, recipient, whatever, and then also pings halfway through to the customs office. Boom, I'm on the way. I'm going to stop at your place. Boom, this is what I've got. What I got loaded.
Exactly.
Boom, here go the documents.
Exactly, and you know, there's so many cool things that are really under works, right? Like, so one of the things that we're working on is event codes, or like, you know, event data points, right? So a lot of times the data will show variations. So you have variations and changes in data that signal something. But we understand that, you know, the real crux of it is having, what does that mean? What is that event? You know, what happens and what can those events trigger? Not maybe with our data, but mixed with somebody else, like a forwarder or somebody has, you know, shipment information or CMR information, is like, how can those events within data start to trigger the next event? And then that next event, which is digitized as well, triggers, you know, so you get that logistics flow of that event, whether it be with the documents or whatnot. But so one of the things that we're working on is really setting up these events. And then you can get in some really interesting ideas, right? Where, so for delivery, for example, one of the craziest things about logistics is paper CMRs, right? And it's going away, thankfully, you know, not as bad as it was. But, you know, you would work with these drivers and carriers, they would do a 2 or 3, you know, 3 week round like a warrior, and they would go back home and they turn in their PODs, and then it would take a month for that to connect. And then it would take another 30 to 60 days for them to get paid. And you ended up with these drivers, because they had no way to put it in, they're 60 or 90 days waiting for payment for a job that was done, right? Where now, you know, with some of these data triggers, you can be connected essentially in sharing your data with maybe a factoring service, right? And so that factoring service, as soon as they receive the ping of, oh, it was delivered, boom, why can't you have automatic transfer in 15 minutes, right? And maybe start to put some more money back into the circulation of the truckers instead of these things waiting, you know, 60, 90 days, or, you know, where it really economically is very, very difficult. And so you could have things where you're updating all these different systems, you know, you're updating the warehouse that, hey, I'm almost there, get ready, is my slot ready? Okay, yes, it is. All right, great. You're unloading, you know, ECMRs, the validation of these documents. where these technologies are there, they exist, but they really are missing reliable data. And that's a big part, like, you know, with a lot of the manually entered data and stuff that's happening out there, even the data we're getting in the industry, a lot of times it's, you know, you want to give it a second look and just make sure that that it still meets intuition. And so we have to get to a spot where you can really trust that data, but it can do some cool stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, just those points that you already that you just alluded to. I mean, talking about cash flow these days, it definitely is a hard topic, I'm sure, for many trucking companies, no matter the size, by the way.
Yeah, it's you know, it's an industry, unfortunately, that's been commoditized, and that commoditization makes it, you know, very, very competitive. And so already the margins are not spectacular, and you know, there are companies who do it very well. They optimize for great margin. There's a lot of really healthy businesses out there, but it's a tough industry to be in, to be healthy. And, you know, so much of it, you get these just incredibly long chains of events that have to happen for payments to happen on top of that. Like, you know, you get big companies that we use outsourcing services. And then, so there's this whole delay that happens on the finances that, you know, for a very large company is already difficult, but for, you know, somebody owning 20 or 30 trucks, 40 trucks, 50 trucks, it's tough. You know, they live 60 or 90 days almost on a credit where they know that that stuff is coming in. And it's so commonplace, but the technology is out there, you know, and it really, I don't think it's going to be so much about just increasing that interoperability and that data sharing to make a lot of these things possible. You know, some of the evolutions that's happening with ECMRs right now is very interesting, but again, you have to have a way to be able to read that data and validate that data without exposing sensitive data. So it's a very complex challenge, right? Like I might get in some blockchain stuff, but, you know, in the far future, but it's really, how do you do that, you know, reliably and still keeping people safe?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's also a good way to put in the comment that we just received from Brent Naples. Brent, by the way, thank you so much for joining. Brent has been following my content for quite some time, so I'm happy that he's joining as well. His comment is, with good data, effective analytics, and identifying patterns to optimize efficiency, this is the only way to do business now. Some of the issues, too, are the technology and knowledge to service sensors and other equipment in the supply chain.
Yeah, yeah, very well said. It's the optimization is a funny one, just because, you know, like I remember when I started in logistics, hearing about the good old days, and this was, you know, like the, I think the 80s, 90s, maybe early 2000s, where it was just this absolute boom of logistics, and, you know, margins were huge, and truckers, you know, loved their job, and everything was golden. But then, you know, you really got into cost cutting, right? These cost cutting centers, all the companies are looking to cut costs, and it went into other avenues, research, or, you know, share buybacks. And so logistics became more and more, how do we cut this cost? How do we optimize? How do we become more efficient? But I think that over the last 10 or 15 years, we found an efficiency that really, you're not going to squeeze much more juice out of this lemon until you can really start to find efficiency. And that's the only way that cost is going to be cut now. It's not, you know, small optimizations and that have been done through G sheets and things like that. It's really scraping out that bottom percent that'll make a big, big difference. And yeah, it's got to come from this, from the data and interoperability.
Let's maybe finish off with an outlook. Let's say, how good, in your opinion, based on what we were discussing now throughout the 90 minutes, how could data help to address challenges within the supply chain industry? Maybe if we, you know, focus on this thing, I think this will give benefit to the audience.
Yeah. So probably the easiest and lowest hanging fruit, and I say this a little bit tongue in cheek, is the climate you know, discussion, because obviously it's a massive problem. Logistics is just a piece of that, a nice healthy chunk, but still a piece. You know, we have data right now that that is being produced that's showing, you know, real-time fuel consumption, carbon emissions. You can, you know, start to measure and regulate NOx emissions, for example. And up to this point, companies have really tried to figure out how much carbon they're producing, what kind of impact do they have, what measures do they need to take to reduce that carbon. But the problem is that without having a good baseline of data, you don't really know where you're starting from, right? You're starting from an estimation. And so there's a lot of really, you know, great calculations that are out there. Probably the, I think the most prevalent one in Europe is the GLEC framework that really does a great job of helping companies have the best estimation possible of their carbon emissions, and really a great way to calculate that. But what you find though is if you're taking companies that are using, you know, manually entered data or some of these other things, it makes that difficult. Whereas as we're getting this data and we're getting better about understanding what data is coming at us, we can really use real-time data, for example, to like calculate carbon emissions, not only on the vehicle, but on the vehicle based on the weight and the load that is being pulled and how often it is running empty versus running full, like how efficient is this vehicle overall. And so you can start to really draw out some really interesting conclusions of how can I reduce my carbon emissions? One, by choosing probably the right vendors that have, you know, newer equipment to low carbon reduction, all the electrification that's happening, but also like where are areas within my supply chain that I can, one, really understand my baseline, which might be higher or lower than what I thought, but I can see areas within my supply chain geographically and chronologically where I have some efficiency gain. So efficiency gain is going to mean, you know, monetary efficiency gains, but it's also going to mean, you know, reduction in carbon emissions overall, better utilization of the vehicles. And so you kind of get hopefully a bit of a virtuous circle that starts to create itself where you're starting to expose where these areas are. That gives you the ability to look at it and touch it and address it. And then, you know, really take some action out of it. And, you know, it's something we've been talking about in the industry for forever. We're finally getting to the point where even OEMs themselves have been working very hard over the last, you know, decade or so just to make the data usable. One of the, you know, everybody talks about data being this gold mine or, you know, oil or whatnot. And it's true. But the thing is, like, even with the gold mine, you don't just walk into a gold mine and walk out with like huge nuggets, right? Like you have to go in there and you have to work it and shape it and mold it and build your mine and all this. And so that's really what's been happening over the last 10 years and still needs a lot more work. But we're finally exposing those data points and events that can be really useful. And so I think there'll be some great progress happening, but it's going to take more cooperation, more and more and more and more, less my platform and more, you know, how do we use this to really be advantageous for everybody.
Yeah, I hear you. Absolutely. And also what you alluded to in the beginning of the conversation, Michael, is I do also believe that, and I agree upon this, that the whole data topic will not only help also the advanced utilization of sustainable fuels, whether that might be hydrogen, whether that might be electricity, whether that might be whatever it might be, also the autonomous trucks, but also with regards to trailers, as you also already alluded to, simply because at the point when the data, or when the trailer in this case, reports back whatever it might be, it also allows the company to adjust specifically on the challenge that the trailer is occurring, i.e. it's standing empty for too long, something like that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that's really why I'm excited about the trailer data, especially. I think they have a road in front of them, but they're really doing some great things. And that's going to be some very interesting data. And so you can have it, you know, two different data sets to tackle two different things. You know, one can be efficiency and, you know, increasing or decreasing carbon. The other one can be really understanding what's happening in the supply chain with your loads.
Perfect. Now, Michael, as we are just approaching the 90 minutes time post, first of all, I wanted to thank you for your time and want to and for sharing your valuable knowledge and information.
Hopefully, it was useful.
Absolutely. If someone in the audience listening to our conversation and saying like, wow, hey, this Michael guy, he really knows what he's talking about. Maybe I do have a fleet or whatever that I'm looking to digitize. Maybe I want to take advantage of the CO3 products and everything. How could they get a hold of you?
So either directly through LinkedIn on Michael Moffitt at LinkedIn. You can also go to our website, co3.eu. We have our new landing page up there concerning that, both carriers and shippers. But we're more than happy just to discuss what we can do with our data and how we can be of service.
Excellent. Excellent. With that being said, Michael, once again, thank you so much. Also to the audience, thank you, everybody, for taking your time out, for joining. And seeing everybody next time. Appreciate it.
Cheers. Thanks, Christoph.
You're welcome.